You don't want to be the tool in search of a problem, right? What you want to do is understand the business challenge.
Hello and welcome to CloudMonk.com. I am your host, Anand Kumar, and I work as a customer engineer at Google. For more such podcast episodes, super simplified lessons and content on cloud, please check out www.cloud-monk.com. That's www.cloud-monk.com. In this episode, we speak to Jerry Walkler, who works as a field sales representative at Google Cloud. We dive into the tech time machine, tracing the path from Y2K to the cutting-edge realm of generative AI. We talk about what a day in the life of a field sales representative looks like. Jerry also shares some super insightful advice for anybody starting off in the cloud solution space, his daily routine outside of tech, all this and more. Without further ado, let's get to the show. Hey, Jerry, welcome to the show. Super glad to have you on the show today with us.
Appreciate it, Nan. Thank you for the opportunity. I'm happy to be a part of CloudMonk.
Awesome. Yeah, really looking forward to talking with you. So before we get started, Jerry, would you be able to give us your background of how you got started in the tech journey and how you got to where you are today?
Absolutely not. Thank you for the opportunity. So maybe I'll kind of start where I am today. So my role here at Google Cloud is I'm a field service representative, as we call it, an FSR. And, you know, that really translates into an account executive or account lead role. So I serve as kind of the virtual leader for all the resources supporting a very strategic set of customers here at Google. But I've been at Google about 4 years, and previous to that, I spent almost a decade with Microsoft. And previous to that, I worked in the consulting or the partner space around professional services. So 25 years, a long time in enterprise sales and business development and supporting customers, and really kind of a you know, wide variety of roles across the industry to get me to where I am today. So it's been a great journey. In the early days, Anand, I'm an old enough guy to remember something that a lot of your listeners might not remember, something called Y2K, right? And that was 23 years ago now. And at the time, I was working for an application development firm, and I was doing business development for that, that application development firm. And we were doing app modernization, right? We were finding legacy apps that were running on mainframe, and we were modernizing those to be Y2K compliant. And it really was an infant industry at the time, right? There weren't large consulting firms 25 years ago, you know, 28 years ago, when we started doing this. And we were working, the company I was working with was working with some very large customers at the time who had these legacy mainframe applications. And, you know, at the time, there was just a real problem finding good developers to help remediate that code. So we were actually training developers on the fly and putting them on site with our customers, doing that code remediation to make sure their applications were Y2K compliant. And at the time, you'll recall too, it was all client server based. So we didn't have, you know, web applications yet at that point. So we were doing, and again, I'm not a technical resource. I'm a sales resource. I should be very careful about saying that up front. I'm, you're not going to find me ever writing a line of code or configuring any hardware. I actually am on the front end of the relationship, managing the relationship with the customer. So I sell the relationship. I sell our team of very smart people to support that journey and actually execute. So they keep me, they make me look good, right? The developer team makes me look good. And, we sold the opportunity to do a lot of remediation, get those applications modernized. And then once they were running as distributed client server-based applications, the cloud applications became a thing, right? So we started using the very same architecture, except this time leveraging the internet, right? So what were Visual Basic front ends back in the day became web front ends. As we got a little bit more into app modernization, and then this, you know, wonderful thing called cloud came along, right? And at the time I was at Microsoft, and, you know, cloud wasn't that new, right? We had cloud offerings and things like Office 365, you know, SaaS offerings, Salesforce was out there in a big way. So the idea of cloud in a SaaS environment wasn't new to customers, but there was this new mindset around platform as a service and infrastructure as a service, right? So what was important for me to be effective in conveying the value of Microsoft's cloud or Amazon's cloud or now Google's cloud to any customer is really making sure I, as a business person and a salesperson, have a good understanding of the value of the cloud and the business benefits of the cloud. Because again, at the time, if you think back, Anand, we were telling our customers that, hey, you should think about the traditional way you're doing things and kind of throw it out the window, right? Because, you know, you'll recall most applications back in the day, and by the way, still are sitting on premise in data centers for our customers. So we do two things, right? And this is true today. One, we have to sell and educate our customers around the business value of the cloud and, you know, all the wonderful pieces that come with it, right? The scalability, the elasticity, the ability to accommodate seasonality in their business. And secondarily, to allow them to focus on the business that they're focused on, right? In other words, they shouldn't be IT companies. If they're an insurance company, let them run their insurance business and let Google think about how to manage the cloud platform in the background. So once we successfully articulate the value of the cloud itself, then we get into the what I call the knife fight, right? So why Google Cloud over AWS over Microsoft, right? And depending on who signs your paycheck, we'll determine you know, which cloud is the best for that particular customer.
That's awesome. Thank you, Jerry. That's a wide variety of experiences, like when you said you started off from the Y2K days,
that's right,
all the way up to generative AI, right?
That's right. And you know, I'm glad you mentioned generative AI, Anand, because this really is as seismic and as monumental a change in the industry as anything is. I mean, I, like I said, I've been doing it a long time, and I feel that same sense I felt when we first launched the idea of cloud. And when we first launched the idea of web-based applications. So generative AI is really going to change our industry. There's no question.
Agreed. Yeah, I was just going to say, like, I think the one thing that's common, like, irrespective of how technology changes and the view at, you know, through which we look at it, from a server client model to a serverless model to, you know, generative AI, there's different phases of technologies, but I think the one thing that's common across for all of our, you know, tech enthusiasts is that we look for a challenging, and then we solve it. That's sort of built into our DNA, and I'm sure, you know, you agree with that as well.
Absolutely not. You know, it's that is how I approach every discussion with my customers or prospective customers. Right? You don't want to be the tool in search of a problem. Right? What you want to do is understand the business challenge. Right? So, you know, maybe our tool is going to be a perfect fit for the customer, maybe not. But if we know what they're trying to accomplish in terms of streamlining operations or increasing revenue or solving for a healthcare outcome, right? I happen to work in the healthcare industry vertical team here at Google. So sometimes it's a healthcare outcome, whatever that is. We'll find out later if the technology is the right fit, but it's incumbent on us as customer servants to really make sure we understand what the challenge they're trying to solve for is. And if we can help them solve that challenge using Google technology or whatever technology you represent, well, then it's, you know, smart to move forward and have a meaningful discussion. But sometimes we can help. And I think it takes a mature seller and someone with a lot of self-awareness to say, you know what, we're not the right fit for you, Mr. Customer. And I think at the end of the day, your customer will respect that in you. And they'll say, hey, thank you. You know, you could have sold me something I don't need. Instead, you steered me in a better direction for my business.
100%. I have to agree, Jerry. Like, I think even some of the customers that I've built long-term trust over, I agree with, you know, your perspective wherein if we are the trusted advisor to the customer, like thinking from their shoes,
that's
instead
right.
of us going with a Google solution or a Microsoft solution, like think about the customer's challenge and then try to solve it from a technology standpoint. And that has, you know, always worked for me in the past as well.
And you know, Anand, here's the interesting piece too, because the very nature of cloud services really mandates that we have that kind of long-term strategy, right, with our customers by delivering business value. Because remember that the cloud revenue model or the cloud economic model is a consumption-based model. And in other words, the hyperscaler, whether it's Google, Microsoft, AWS, whoever, they make revenue when the customer consumes the cloud service. It's not like the old days, right, when we sold a license and you transacted that sale and you know, the seller incurred the revenue and, you know, that was the end of the relationship. What the customer did with that license was up to them. Under the cloud economics model, if the customer doesn't use your stuff, you don't generate revenue from it, right? You only get paid on what's actually consumed. So it's the very economic model of cloud mandates that we deliver a customer success approach and a customer empathy and a customer problem solving approach first. And if, like you said, Anand, if we do that right, then we'll continue to get future business and future opportunities with the customer.
Agreed. Yeah, I think it's super important and vital. I think it, you know, from our role standpoint, that's probably one of the most important skills, I would say, like empathizing with the customer. And I feel like it should be part of our DNA, and it is part of most of our the folks working
for sure. Yeah, I know that our colleagues feel that way, and even when I worked for other hyperscalers, I can say that for the most part was the way folks think. And I think to be successful in this day and age, and now especially with the economy being the way it is, customers are expecting more, demanding more, right? And all we have to do is deliver on that, and we'll continue to earn the business.
Agreed. With that said, I know you briefly touched on this, Jerry, but if you had to describe an ideal day in the life of a field sales representative in Google, what would it look like?
That's interesting. An ideal day or a typical day, right? An ideal day is
maybe a typical day.
Ideal day is I'm done with meetings by 9 a.m. and I can spend the rest of the day doing some reading, right? A typical day is will consist of, you know, a really good balance, Anand, because and when I say balance, I mean the two sides of my role are one, supporting existing business or supporting existing customers and helping them grow and be successful. And then the other side of that, the balance is looking for kind of the next new opportunity with my customers. So one thing about a strategic account representative is we only have at most two or three customers. So I have two very, very large healthcare payers or insurance companies that I support. So if I want to seek net new business, I can't just randomly, you know, cold call or try to generate business with a net new company, because that company is being supported by somebody else here at Google, right? So I have to think about my sales universe or total potential opportunity as those two customers of mine, right? So so there's that component of my daily activity that consists of building net new relationships, prospecting, what I call change management or enablement and readiness. So Anand, I absolutely understand that if our customers want to be successful in our technology, they really have to understand how to use it, how to feel comfortable using it. So a good part of my enablement and my prospecting effort goes to what I call customer readiness. So what more can we be doing, Mr. Customer, to help you be comfortable with Google Cloud technologies? What more can we provide your stakeholders so that they have all the tools they need from a support perspective and from a delivery perspective to be successful? What partners, you know, services partners do you need to meet to help you be successful? So there's that kind of enablement or prospecting component to my day. And then the other half of it is projects that are in flight and you know, going from proof of concept to production. You know, certainly I'm not a technical resource, as I said at the outset, but I do have accountabilities to the customer. So I'll sit in on a lot of those calls and I'll listen to people that are a whole lot smarter than me, Anand, and discussing these technical solutions. And then I'll be listening for, should I be doing something here? Is there something that the account team should be doing to help support the actual delivery or the success of the solution that we've already prescribed for that customer. So it's that delicate balance between finding net new and creating and supporting net new opportunities, as well as farming and cultivating the existing opportunities in flight to help make sure they're successful. And then the last part of it is the relationship aspect of it. And you said it earlier on, you talked about how critical it is to make sure you cultivate the customer relationship. And I think it's real simple, right? It's understanding the people that work with these customers, that work for these customers, understanding what's important to them, understanding how they're measured and their roles, and what can we be doing as Google folks to help them meet those KPIs and those objectives, because quite often their KPIs and their objectives are not the same as ours. So to your point earlier around customer empathy and getting in their shoes, it's important for us to understand what's critical to them, right? And to be able to deliver on those. So sometimes it'll be just a 15-minute virtual coffee with a stakeholder mm-hmm. at my customer. I'll ask them for a feedback session or a chance to understand what's important to them. Listen to them if they want to talk about their families or their favorite sports team, right? Just understand more behind the person. And I think that makes us more effective at what we're trying to do from a business perspective.
Agreed. Yeah, actually, what you said reminds me of what one of my, FSRs that I used to work with used to say when I asked him, like, hey, when I newly joined the team, I asked him, what's the most important thing or what's the one thing that I should be aware of even before I get started? He said,
yeah,
this is all about people. Like, I know technology is important, you're solving challenges, but then at the end of the day, it's all about the people. So understanding, working with them and building relationships is monumentally important.
And now they're trusting their jobs to us in a lot of cases, right? They're mm-hmm. they're trusting that if they select us as their particular platform, the success of that is going to, impact the way they're viewed amongst their peers at work. So we can have the best technology in the world, but if we can't build that trust and confidence in the customer through having the right people on these discussions, through being able to support our positions around our technology, then we're not doing our job right. So I think it's to your point, it's multi-component, right? Show up with the right tech. Yes, absolutely. But building that trust, building that confidence, and having the accountability to them, right? Because mm-hmm. we both know, and not every single solution or deployment goes perfectly according to plan, right? But it's how we respond to the things that do happen along the way. Are we accountable? Do we make it right quickly, right? Do we respond, or do we hide and hope it goes away, right? All those things matter in building that long-term accountability. And that's the other thing about my role, and I know in your role, it takes, we will cover these customers, support these customers for years. So it can take months to build trust. Mm-hmm. And it only takes an instant to lose that trust, right? So we have to continue to build that trust and earn that trust and confidence every day by continuing to do the right things, even when they're already becoming a customer, right? If they're already consuming cloud services with us, that's great. And I'm super appreciative of that. But what else should we be doing on a daily basis to continue to earn the right to do business with them?
I couldn't agree more, Jerry. Thank you for that perspective. What are some of the interesting projects that you or your team has worked on, Jerry? I know you said you are from the healthcare space. You don't have to go into the specifics of the customer details, but if you can talk about the project at a high level, that would be good.
Certainly not. So, one of the things that every customer, not just healthcare customers, are wondering about, but are certainly talking about, something you alluded to earlier, and that's, what's the role of generative AI going to be in our industry? And I can tell you that across both my customers, we've had a number of workshops, a number of discussions in the C-suite around, the impact of generative AI. But the specifics come down to what are going to be the use cases that are going to positively impact my industry. And every industry, and certainly healthcare being a regulated industry, has its own implications that what specific use cases, and more importantly, what specific considerations and governance do we have to be especially concerned about? Because, again, as a regulated industry, we have to be concerned about compliance with HIPAA rules, the handling of personally identifiable information, the handling of healthcare data, patient data, member data, doctor-physician data, all that, right? So it's not as simple as it might be in another industry like manufacturing or retail, where analytics can be anonymized very easily. Healthcare, there's a whole different set, a much higher standard of privacy and confidentiality has to be maintained. So we're certainly talking about those. And the good news is we have about half a dozen very strategic use cases that we can begin to talk about today in the Gen AI business. But really across the board, you know, for any cloud provider to be of value to their customer and to their partners, we have to meet the core thresholds around security, around privacy, around data replication, failover, all those kind of, you know, core, what I call table stakes, right? And we have to do that first and foremost. Then we can start to think about, hey, let's take advantage of all these additional features that the cloud and, you know, modern application architecture can bring to the customer. But we have to show up with table stakes first and make sure that they're secure and their data and privacy is as protected as it would be in their traditional on-premise environments.
Great. Yeah. As somebody who used to work in regulated industries and is currently working in regulated industries, I can totally, you know, agree with what you're saying.
Sure.
Every time, you know, the new technologies are great, but then we'd also have to make sure that it's compliant with some of the regulations that's out there. So,
and it goes back to our earlier discussion around customer empathy, right? If we think about the people that, you know, we're speaking to on a daily basis, we might be very familiar with the cloud and very comfortable in the cloud. We've been doing it for years. But the reality is a lot of them are at, you know, 50-year-old, 100-year-old organizations. I used to cover, back in the day when I was at Microsoft, I used to cover an account that was over 100 years old, a manufacturing, a consumer product goods company. And every perspective they had was, well, we're doing this on-premise today and nothing's broken, right? Why this cloud, right? Is this cloud idea just, you know, the flavor of the month? And it took quite a while just to get them to think outside that kind of, you know, traditional paradigm of on-premise applications. Then once they move to the cloud, they move very quickly too. That's the interesting outcome because they see the value pretty quickly. But to your point, we have to establish that the very core, table stakes around security, privacy, governance, and protect the customer's data assets because it really is the new currency.
Agreed. I think, once we have the table stakes, and like you said earlier, we focus on the enablement piece. And once we have the enablement, then it's the customer's adoption of cloud is going to be much easier and smoother, the journey. So
that's exactly right. You know, I couldn't agree more. And, we have to think of ourselves as, you know, not just sellers or enablers, but in some respect, teachers, right? And and have that customer empathy so we can help them make the move to achieve the success they want to achieve in their business, but doing it in a supportive and empathetic manner. They have to feel that, and it should be this way, that we're partnering with them, we're helping them be successful. And our technology is just a tool, another tool in our tool belt to enable. But at the end of the day, their success is the important piece of the relationship. That's that at the end of the day is the only thing that matters.
Agreed. Awesome. So one of the things I know we talked about, you know, the cloud solution space, the projects that you're working on, Jerry. Mm-hmm. But if you had any advice to give for somebody who's just starting off in the cloud solution space, what would be your advice? I know, you know, one of your 20% projects is enabling Googlers, which is basically new Googlers onboarding and be ready for the Google journey. And I was fortunate enough to have you as one of my, persons who were onboarding me, and I had a really great experience.
Well, I love that. I was very honored to have you in the group, Anand. You set a very high bar. You brought your energy and your enthusiasm, and it really made the group special.
Oh, thank you so much, Jerry. That was very kind of you. Yeah, I'd love your perspective, Jerry, like, you know, on how should somebody new?
Yeah, absolutely. And so first, I would say to anybody considering a career, whether it's at Google or Microsoft or AWS or wherever you might want to work, pursue it with energy and enthusiasm, even if you're not a technical resource. I think that's the big mistake a lot of people make. I ran into someone the other day and it was a casual conversation, and she told me, she said, boy, you get to work at Google, you know, you must be really smart. And I kind of chuckled, said, no, I'm not. I'm not a very technical resource, right? My specialty or my skill is around, you know, accountability and serving our customers. So I would say, first of all, don't say no, or don't dismiss, where you are today to where you may be. The other thing too is I started pretty late in my career path to begin to work in technology. The first almost 20 years of my career, I worked in sales, but it was around financial services and payroll. So, because the cloud didn't exist and technology didn't even exist till I was almost 40 years old. So, I came to the business at the time the business was just becoming a thing. So don't write off the fact you may not be a technical resource. So what? You know, you have other skills that are going to be very valuable to Google or Microsoft or Amazon or wherever you want it is that you want to be. Secondly, Anand, I would say, and you know this too, start talking to people in that business and understand, you know, listen to podcasts, right? Listen to podcasts like this one. Understand people's paths and then take it one step further. Reach out to them on LinkedIn or social media, wherever you can. And just ask them. Ask them for a virtual coffee. I think most people are afraid or shy about doing that, and I wouldn't be. Something that some early mentors in my life taught me is, you know, if you ask, the worst someone could say is, I don't have time or no, right? But the best thing they can say is yes, and happy to give you a few minutes of my time. And by the way, you're forging your own relationship network then, right? If you have a lot of industry professionals, that increases the scope of your network exponentially. So if they understand what you're looking for in a career, they can be another set of ears for you on your behalf and listen and make recommendations. And the best possible outcome would be, of course, they begin to say, wow, this person has a really special set of skills. I want to advocate for that person and recommend them for an opportunity, whether it's at Google, Microsoft, AWS, wherever they may be looking, right? So don't be bold about that. I almost never turn down LinkedIn invitations. I love to connect up with people. I would encourage listeners to connect up. Maybe there's a way I can help you. I think people like you and me, Anand, we've talked about this, right? We are so fortunate to get to work for a great organization like this, that if we can help others land on their feet and be successful in their own right, I think there's no greater gift. So, that would be my advice to anybody, you know, be bold, reach out to, you know, whoever you meet in your travels and come up at a place where, you know, you can help one another, and then pay it forward to somebody else, right? When someone helps you, you turn around and help others.
Agreed. I think, one thing I want to say is, like, you have been amazing, like, in the onboarding journey. And I'm going to take the liberty of posting your LinkedIn URL in the show notes description. And don't blame me if you start getting a flood of requests.
Oh, that's okay. That's a great problem to have, having too many friends,
exactly.
Right?
I
would love
but
that.
I do want to tell the audience that Jerry is an amazing person, like, you know, from a mentorship, and also, like, anytime you have any issues or concerns, he's been a great person to, like, you know, reach out to. So thank you, Jerry.
Oh, Anand, it's my honor, and I look forward to those LinkedIn invitations from your listeners, and really, truly, if I can help in any way, please make the ask. I love that. The worst I can say is sorry I can't help, but I'll always try, I promise.
Yeah, and I'd really like that as well, like, because one of the things that I was also told early on, and even before I started this podcast or the animated videos, was that somebody told me, like, hey, you can reach out to anybody that you want. The worst that they can say is no.
That's right.
So that's not, you know, you don't have to stop yourself even trying, right? So that's great advice.
Yeah, and there's no bigger or more important investment you can make than in yourself, right? So take the opportunity to make the investment, to invest the time, and, you know, someone will maybe willing to invest the time with you. And as I said earlier, pay it forward, right? Once you are in a place where you can help others, please do so. That just makes the world better.
100%. I agree. So outside of work, Jerry, I know with Google, you have a really busy, hectic, lifestyle. But outside of work and outside of your, day-to-day job, what is your daily routine look like?
I love to talk about this. So thank you so much for asking, Anand. you know, for folks unfamiliar with RPGs or role-playing games, you may be familiar with the most popular, that's Dungeons & Dragons. So I have a group of folks that I play Dungeons & Dragons with on a monthly basis. We get together, and most of them, just by coincidence, are industry professionals too. So, you know, we're all technology nerds, but we also like to put away our mice and our keyboard and take out some graph paper and polyhedral dice and, you know, go out on a fantasy adventure fighting trolls and dragons and owl bears and orcs and have a lot of fun doing that virtually. It's a great exercise for the imagination. The other thing I love to do is I'm big in what we call comic fandom. So I attend conventions. I go to San Diego Comic-Con every year with my buddies, and we really have a blast to, you know, interacting with people. And for those of you looking for me in a costume, no, I don't do cosplay, but I do enjoy the energy from all the people that attend those conventions, whether it's board gaming, whether it's comic books, whether it's whatever the case is, you know, for that convention. We enjoy each other as people and just really get exposed to that whole different side of us. You know, it's great to see folks take off the professional cloak for a minute, right, and be their own people. So it's a great opportunity. And if folks want to learn more about that, reach out to me as well. I'd love to talk about Dungeons and Dragons and comic book fandom and Comic-Con and everything else. So
awesome. Love it. I love the nerdy side of you.
Oh, it's a blast. Now, in fact, I'm heading to New York City. New York City Comic-Con is this weekend. I'll be up in New York with my good friends enjoying the day there, starting on Thursday of this week. So yeah, it's a lot of fun, and it's great to interact with people. I'm also married and have some pets here at home, but you know, that's pretty traditional stuff. Not nearly as exciting as my life at Google and my life and you know, my hobbies as well.
Awesome, thank you so much, Jerry. This is great chatting with you. I personally, you know, learned a lot. Appreciate you sharing your perspectives. And I know you had said, you know, like LinkedIn is the best way to reach you. Is that still?
Yeah, absolutely. I read it every day. I post almost every day. That's just easy for me. And, you know, there are other social networks, and I try to reserve Google for Google Business, my Google email. So start LinkedIn. Mm-hmm. It's a great place to get started. And, you know, if I can help or if we can get the conversation going, I love meeting people. So that's the best place and on for sure.
Awesome. Thank you so much, Jerry, once again. Appreciate you taking the time.
It's my honor, and thank you for including me here on Cloud Monk.
Thank you.